and welcome back to the Album Files podcast. My name is Abby Mickey. Well, I'm here with Matt Deneev. Matt.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello. Good to see you again, friends.
The intro. And,
I wasn't done.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's it. That's all I had. I'm just kidding. Go on.
Ian.
Hello.
Do you have anything else you want to say before I cut you off?
Hang on, me or Matt?
You.
Oh, okay. I thought we were particularly on brand with how chaotic we were in the opening 30 seconds. It was even more chaotic before. I got told that I was having too much energy, which is not something that anyone has ever said about me. So that's good.
We are here for Matt's pick. Good Kid, Mad City?
I think just Mad
Kendrick
City.
Lamar.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. But what's the fun in that? Before we dive into that, raise your hand if you've been listening to 1989 Taylor's version.
This is an audio medium.
I have not listened to it yet. I want. What? I know. I'm letting the side down. I want to, and the reason I haven't is I want to set aside some time and actually listen to it properly. I listened to a couple of tracks on YouTube, just watching the visualizer videos, but I haven't listened to the whole thing yet. So I'm keen to hear what you guys
Which
think.
Which tracks did you listen to?
Oh, no, I can't remember. Welcome to New York, and I can't remember. I think I listened to a couple, but yeah, keen to hear what you guys think of it and how it stacks up.
I don't know if I want to talk about it before you've listened to it, because okay. I don't want opinions to skew the way you listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ian, you can just give me like a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Did you like it? Did you not like it?
Again, an audio medium.
Thumbs up from Ian. That's good. I mean, I'm sure it's great. It's pretty hard to go wrong based on the source material, I would have thought. But it's all about the bonus tracks, right?
Yeah, and I think these are some of her best bonus tracks, in my personal opinion, particularly the final one.
You said you didn't want to influence him. You didn't want to influence him, and now you're bragging about one of the songs. You can't help yourself.
I was just so excited to talk about it. Okay, well, we don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it as well. And I agree with you, Abby.
Come on, just give us a vibe. It's not going to change anything. I'm still going to enjoy it, I'm sure. Give me the high-level notes. What did you think of it?
Best re-recording so far. Still a slam dunk album.
Okay.
I think second best re-recording so far behind Red, because All Too Well 10-Minute
It's really hard
version.
To beat All Too Well 10-Minute Version, to be fair.
But 3 out of 5 of the bonus tracks are great, and one of them is really, really great.
Which one's that?
The last one is
really, really good.
Is it Over Now is just an outrageous banger.
The Bleachers crossover one, right?
It might as well be like Taylor Swift featuring Jack Antonoff for how much Bleachers influence is in that song.
Mm. I think I heard part of that on the radio the other day.
It's kind of...
Yeah, sounded good.
Oh, is it on the radio?
It's the first single. It's the first single that they've released for the radio.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah, well, it will do very well. I'm sure it'll be number one in a matter of time and nudge Cruel Summer.
I think it is already.
Oh, is it?
I think it's replaced Cruel Summer. Yeah, I was reading some stats the other day, or today, for the Wheel Talk newsletter, in which I talk about stats.
Wow. Of course.
Taylor Swift stats. Yeah.
It's pretty wild that the song that this song has dislodged as number one is from an album that came out in like 2019. And just had this renaissance as a single 4 years later, and now a re-record track, bonus song, is number one. That's remarkable.
I feel like it really speaks to business savviness that she's managed to leverage "Cruel Summer" to be this massive banger 4 years after it came out. But I do think when Lover was released, that song was like the quiet favorite for everybody on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think she said in an interview recently, or Jock said in an interview, that they wanted that to be the lead single for the album, but that the label influenced them to go towards Me and You Need to Calm Down to be the two like big singles from the album. Yeah, we've talked about this, although not on this podcast, to be fair. That her... When she picks singles, God, does she do a bad job. But she did actually, he said in an interview recently that she did actually want Cruel Summer to be the lead single. But I think it speaks volumes of her fans and her as a businesswoman that she's able to have that song be as big as it is right now.
Well, how did she
do
that?
Pretty remarkable. I think by making it one of the biggest songs of the Eras tour. Like,
right.
It doesn't open the Eras tour, but it is the first. It's like the second song that she sings on the Eras Tour, but it's the first full song she sings on the Eras Tour, and it's the first bridge, and she really plays into that. Mm-hmm. Neither of you have seen the Eras Tour film, I take it.
Not yet.
I feel like I need to rethink my podcasting mates right now. Anyway, yeah, it's like the second song that she sings, and it's a really like huge number in the Eras Tour. And I think that that had a little bit to do with this, but I also think that it's just such a good song. Like, yeah, that she's pushed it since it came out, and the fans have pushed it to be as big as it is.
I think also that pretty soon after Lover came out, COVID came along, and
yeah,
nobody really wanted an upbeat summer jam in the first year of COVID. And then she was getting onto other re-records and Folklore,
she
Evermore.
Went into Folklore and Evermore. I think if Loverfest had been able to happen as planned, then Cruel Summer would have been the biggest song of summer 2020. But as it happened, that didn't happen. There was no summer 2020. There was only sadness.
Not the band.
Not to be confused with Ian's favorite band. Anyway, since you haven't been listening to Taylor Swift's 1989 Taylor's Version, what have you been listening to?
Mainly just the Beatles' new song on repeat, both.
Oh, so good.
The song and In My Head. It just cannot get out of my head. It's pretty incredible. I feel like we need to talk a bit about it because, I mean, the fact that there's a new Beatles song on its own is a pretty remarkable thing. And yeah, I know a lot of artists, bands, whatever, release music later on or even posthumously or whatever, but when it's the Beatles, it's kind of a big deal. And the way it was done as well with you know, this demo that John Lennon wrote in 1977, and the fact that they tried to create this song after his death in 1995, which he didn't die in 1995, that was when they tried to recreate the track, but they couldn't because of technical issues. And then, you know, off the back of the Peter Jackson documentary, they were able to, you know, develop the technology that allowed them to isolate John Lennon's vocal to then use that in this track now and then. The whole backstory and the way that's captured in the video on the Beatles website, on Beatles' YouTube channel, is pretty incredible. And then the song is just beautiful, just kind of haunting. And I think it's a lovely song, and it's kind of typically Beatles-esque for me in that it's, in some ways, very simple, but also has a richness and complexity to it that's not immediately obvious, that kind of rewards future listens. And yeah, John Lennon's vocal line, that is just so beautiful. So I've been listening to a lot of that, and yeah, I'm very glad that they put the effort into re-releasing that. You've been listening to it too, right, Abby?
Yeah, I have. And I feel like you have to understand the backstory behind it to really appreciate what they've done. Because while it is a really good song, and I think haunting is a very good word to use to describe it, I think it's just so important to understand that it is actually John Lennon singing, and that they've been able to use software that they didn't have available at the time when they first tried to record it to pull his vocals out. Because when Paul McCartney first said, oh, we're working on this new Beatles track using AI, like, the internet was furious, and potentially rightfully so. And that was mostly just him not knowing exactly how to explain what they were doing. Because when I first listened to it with my sister, she was like, oh, the AI song? Like, no. It's fine. It's a pale imitation of the Beatles. And I was like, no, this is the Beatles. This is actually the Beatles. It's just like been made over many years. And I think there's something so beautiful in them being able to create this song with two of the members having passed away at this point, and two of the members, you know, being able to get in the studio again for the final time to make a song. And now I think in a time when the next generation coming up does not have the same, nearly the same experience with the Beatles as like even my generation does, where our parents were part of the Beatles hype, but like, and we got the after effects of that. Like, I grew up listening to the Beatles nonstop, and a couple of my close friends were in like a Beatles cover band, for lack of a better, they weren't, but they played many, many a Beatles song. And, One of them actually went on to be, to go to, I think it's, is it, I don't know if it's John Lennon's School of Music in Liverpool. He went there. Anyway, the long, short story long. So I think for us who grew up on the Beatles, it's really, I was reading an article the other day. I don't remember if it was on, it was the New York Times or something, about how millennials are experiencing nostalgia for the first time. And it was the same day that I heard this song and I was like, shoot.
Got me.
Really frustrating. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Ian, as a noted Beatles hater, what did you think of it? Have you heard it?
I haven't heard it. Sorry, I've not done my homework on that front. And I apologize.
Well, you listened to Taylor Swift, so...
I've been too busy listening to Taylor Swift.
You at least did part of it.
I am interested to check it out, but Matt's right. Like, I'm not a noted Beatles hater. I just never... never really got into them or was exposed to them growing up. So when I was first listening to the Beatles, it was because a friend of mine was listening to the Beatles and he was brought up on the Beatles, but I never was. So
I feel like we need to do a Beatles album at some point.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it. It'd be good for Ian, I think.
Yeah, it would.
Have my medicine.
Matt, did listening to it make you want to go like dig into any of their albums or anything?
Not really, to be honest. I don't listen to their stuff all that much, if I'm honest, but I don't know, I think I just appreciated it for what it was, and the getting to see the footage of them trying to write it in 1995 and struggling, and I don't know, just the archive footage that's in that short film about how it was made is pretty awesome, and then the music video as well, which has got some kind of AI trickery going on in it as well, which makes it a little bit Uncanny Valley kind of stuff, but still very cool to see. And there's some shots of Paul and Ringo playing side by side, and then I guess holograms almost of George and John on the far sides of them playing at the same time, which is, it's pretty cool. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, definitely check it out. I'm curious to hear what you have to say about it as not a Beatles fan.
Yeah, I'm curious to what I'm going to say about it as well.
The only other thing I've been really listening to this week is completely other end of the spectrum. A new track from Aussie pop punk. Yeah, let's call them pop punk. The Veronicas. They've got a new single out called Perfect, which is from an upcoming album called Gothic Summer. I think it's pretty good. It's fun. They've had some good moments and some less good moments in their time over the last, 20 years? Wow, something like that. This is fun. I'm looking forward to hearing more.
I can only name one song by the Veronicas, Untouched. What else have they done?
Forever was their big one. You know, that angular guitar riff, the tritone. You'd know it if you heard it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
This is when I wish that I could put music into the podcast episodes. Damn you, Apple Music.
It would be good.
It would.
We've discussed this at length.
Yeah, but just in case we have new listeners, we don't.
There are reasons. We don't have new listeners. We're actively driving them away with each episode.
Probably. Ian, what have you been listening to?
Well, I'm about to drive them away even more because I've been listening to...
Sadness.
No, well, in a way. I've been listening to an album by a two-person band called Regana. The album's called Desolation's Flower. They describe themselves as queer, anti-fascist, sentimental destruction doom from the northwestern forests and the fog of the bay. So, it is doom metal, which is a bit like Bellwitch, which is a band that I really like, reminds me a lot of them, but melodic. And, I've been enjoying that. I've also been listening to Woods of Desolation, who are an Australian post-black metal band, kind of in that Alcest vibe. And that's been good. And Taylor Swift.
A natural combination.
Yeah.
Totally.
Doom metal.
That's a very
Taylor
Ian
Swift
combination, to be fair.
Yeah. On brand with myself.
Well, should we, to swing things in a completely different direction, should we get into our album of the week?
Yeah. Let's talk gangster rap. What do you reckon?
Exciting.
I think you should start by telling us why you picked this album.
Why did you do this to us?
Yeah, you say that with such ominous...
It's such an... It's such an interesting Matt pick, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think there's a lot to talk about here, and I'm excited to do so. Yeah, so the album is Good Kid, Mad City, which is the second studio album from American rapper Kendrick Lamar. It's his major label debut, came out in 2012, came after his first album the year before called Section 80. As we touched on there, it is gangster rap. It's West Coast hip hop. It's some amalgam of those two, I guess. And I guess probably worth flagging up front that gangster rap in particular comes with its own built-in vibes that might not suit a lot of people. I think there's, there's some baked-in misogyny and a whole bunch of other really unpleasant stuff in this genre that I think you either have to overlook or be at peace with or at least acknowledge if you're going to listen to this music. And maybe we'll get to that as we go through this. But this is a concept album. It's basically Kendrick's retelling of his upbringing on the streets of Compton. It talks about living a gang lifestyle and basically tells a story through the eyes of the character K-Dot, who then throughout the course of the album grows to become the Kendrick Lamar that we know. Rolling Stone last year dubbed it as the greatest concept album of all time, which is a massive claim, nudging out, some pretty epic ones from, Pink Floyd and The Who and things like that. I think, and it's also very well regarded by critics when it came out in 2012 and subsequently. So got a whole bunch of Grammy nominations, made a whole bunch of best album of the year lists, and it's been, it's received a lot of praise in the decade and a bit since. There's a kind of funny story about how it was nominated for the best rap album Grammy in 2012, 2013. And that category was won by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis for The Heist. And Macklemore publicly apologized to Kendrick Lamar afterwards and said that it was a disgrace. And the messages that Macklemore sent to Kendrick afterwards kind of circulate online. They're worth taking a look if you're interested, because obviously a lot of mutual respect between the two, and I don't think Macklemore could quite believe it. But I think this is a fascinating album, and to me there's a few levels to it. So normally when I listen to music, as we've discussed in the past, I'm listening at more of a surface level and how the music makes me feel, and listen to the music more than the lyrics. But I think if you just listen to this album on that level, you're really missing out. I think this is an album with incredible depth and complexity, and tells the story of a deep journey and quite a harrowing journey in a lot of ways. As I said, it is a concept album, and the story is actually quite hard to follow, and it's not immediately obvious. And I admit that listening to it myself, I wasn't able to fully piece together what was going on, because it isn't chronological. As I said, it talks about the story of Kendrick's upbringing, but the story beats are spread throughout the album and in a seemingly random order at times. And it does deal with themes of, young love and violence on the streets, and a mate if he's getting killed, and drugs and violence and drink. But what it does differently to a lot of the things in this genre is it's quite introspective, and it's not glorifying that violence and that lifestyle as much as other things. And a lot of it is Kendrick's reckoning about who he is as a person and what the environment that he grew up in did to him as a person, and what that says about the place and the people around him. In Kendrick's words from 2012, you don't hear artists from Compton showing vulnerability. You always hear about the person pulling the trigger. You never hear about the one in front of it. That's the most interesting story to me. And I think that this album really encapsulates that. It's the story of coming of age, of someone being shaped by their environment and then realizing once they were able to get free of it, that it wasn't the best influence, and being able to see what it did to them. One of the biggest feelings I've had with this album is that it's not really for me. I feel like it's in the sense that it's an album that very much talks to black experiences in a black neighborhood, and something that I really couldn't relate to. And I found that to make it a bit of a difficult listen at times, but also more fascinating for it. I think it's a really interesting peek into a different world that I just have no concept of, and I really appreciated that. And I think more than just about any other album that I've heard, this isn't an album that I, quote, enjoy listening to, in the sense that I don't listen to the songs and go, that's an amazing song, I can't wait to put that on again. I listen to this for the journey and for the experience and for the glimpse that it gives me of a different world. And I think he's been able to weave a narrative and take us into his world in a way that few artists can do. And I really, really appreciate that. I think he's a master of his craft, and I think this is a pretty stunning album. So I might leave the intro there and I can jump in with some more stuff as we go along, but definitely keen to hear what you guys think about it and yeah, how you found the narrative stuff as well.
Do you want me to go first? I can go first.
You can go first. I mean, I don't have like a ton to say, so I could go first. I feel like I felt so out of place listening to this album, and I felt that way also when I listened to like Little Sims, for example, but it's such a different experience listening to this. A lot of it makes me feel like super uncomfortable, mostly because I don't usually listen to music with swearing, minus Taylor's, like, I don't know, I think she said fuck 8 times maybe in her entire discography. But usually the music that I gravitate towards doesn't really have such graphic content. Like even in Backseat Freestyle, which is potentially one of my favorite songs on the album, and that's because it's one of the ones that I'm most familiar with. Like that's the one I have it stuck in my head. It's quite I don't know, unsettling, I guess, but also like a little bit. It's one of the more fun songs on the album, I feel like. It definitely doesn't have some of the really dark like undertones of some of the other stuff. But there's one line where he's talking about his dick being as big as the Eiffel Tower, and I'm like, I could do without that in my head. So in that sense, like, I guess I can totally, when listening to it, I can totally see why you would pick it, because of the narrative running through it and because it gives us a lot to talk about. But for me listening to it, I was just like, I have no place being here listening to it. And like I was playing it today, I had it playing like while we were all eating lunch in the background, and my mom was just like incensed that like, what is this you're listening to? And Lila was dancing because she obviously doesn't know what the lyrics are or anything, but so that was pretty funny. But I think, yeah, I don't know, my main feeling was like a little bit like, ooh, should I be here? Like
that's a fascinating feeling, right? Like that was the first thing I thought when I first heard this album years ago, and it's still something that I feel every time I listen to it, is like I shouldn't be here. It's almost like, I don't know, walking the streets of a dodgy neighborhood. You're kind of like, this is not my place. And I think that's a really interesting feeling, that music can do that for a start, but also like sitting with that feeling is quite fascinating. Like why isn't it like, this is a piece of art that anybody can consume. So why shouldn't we consume it? And what can it tell us then? What does that uncomfortable feeling tell us? And to me, it's just like, as I said before, it is an opportunity to take a look into a world that is being presented in a way that's like just so raw and so unfiltered in a way, and there's something very powerful about that. But I totally agree, I think it is a quite an uncomfortable listen at times, and the language is intense and the themes are intense, and yeah, it's a quite a harrowing listen. I think
that there's a kind of voyeurism of catching a side of something like that, and the strength in the storytelling is that it does bring you along on that journey, as if you're riding in the car with the boys when they're, you
know, the homies. Yep.
Yeah. And but I think in your intro, Matt, I think you articulated really well the sort of humanity behind it, and the fact that it does have this complexity to the story, that whilst being a West Coast hip hop album, it has less of that bragginess and glorification of violence and drugs and that kind of stuff. It's kind of like the other side of the coin. And that is quite powerful. And I think that the journey that Kendrick brings the listener on is quite remarkable because it does have that human complexity to it. If it was the same music with different lyrical content and was not as introspective as it is, I don't think it would be an album that I'd be all that interested in, to be honest. But the fact that there is that light and shade and that sort of tug of war between religion, like salvation, and not being able to find that and choosing violence instead, I think that that sets up this kind of narrative crux.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you get to see a little bit of that braggy kind of typical West Coast stuff in Compton, the final track with Dr. Dre. And obviously he's a titan of that scene, and you know, his work is revolutionary, and that song is much more like standard from that scene in a way. But the fact that it comes at the end, even though it's at the start of the narrative, supposedly, even though the fact that it comes at the end is kind of good, it almost acts as like a post-credits kind of thing. Like, and I think if it was at the start, it would almost set the wrong tone of being like, hey, here's this thing about how great Compton is and all that, when actually that's not the vibe at all. It's like Kendrick's saying he has love for where he's from, but he also acknowledges that it's a deeply flawed place that's created a lot of deeply flawed individuals. And having it at the end is, I think, a really good choice, even though it makes the narrative more challenging to understand. It acts as a nice coda to the whole album, I think.
I could do without that song completely.
What? Compton?
Yeah.
What? No, I disagree wholeheartedly. I feel like the way that Real ends would be way too definitive an end to the album. The way that it ends with the phone call, I think, would not end the album properly. Like, I feel like ending it with Compton, the way that the whole narrative goes, like, for me, I don't see any other way that the album could end than with Compton. I feel like that's the perfect ending to the album. It's one of my favorite songs, I think, on the album.
It's a skip for me. Like, I almost don't think Real needs to be there. I'd almost cut it off after Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst. And that has that sort of prayer sample, which is the same as at the start of the album. It just sort of loops back. Like, that is where the album, to me, feels like it should finish. And Real doesn't really go anywhere. Has that nice sort of parental closer to the narrative. But as a song, it doesn't do much. Compton just feels out of place.
Compton feels like an end credit, but like you love an end credit.
Yeah, it does feel like an end credit. That's probably a good way of putting it. But I think that there's almost like a bit of whiplash to it when you've been on this journey with all of these spoken word interludes and all this kind of stuff, and then you just have this glossy kind of finisher.
Fact that it's glossy is important too. Like, you listen to the production on that compared to the rest of the album, and it stands out so much. Like, it is a Dr. Dre slick production versus the kind of minimalist stuff that we've heard for the rest of it.
Yeah, but I prefer the minimalist stuff. And I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
I think that's a fine perspective. We should talk about the recordings and stuff, because I know in the past, voice memos and audio recordings have, you know, we've been pretty critical of those, or we haven't loved them in albums. I would argue that they are a vital part of the narrative here, and that they serve a purpose much greater than they do in, say, I don't know, Lizzie McAlpine stuff, where she just kind of sprinkles them in. These actually are vital to moving the story along. What do you guys reckon?
I agree. And I feel like, similar to Little Sims, when she uses spoken word interludes and stuff, for the same reason that it doesn't quite bother me like other artists using that as a tool for their albums, for this one it felt like it's necessary for the story that he's trying to tell. And I think it does carry a lot more weight in this album than it has in albums we've talked about before.
It also feels kind of real. I assume that all of it is like scripted and acted out by people, but it doesn't feel like that, really. Like, it feels quite, it feels like you're in the car. It feels like you're, you know, robbing a house. It feels like you're being shot at.
Feels like you're hearing a voice memo from your mum saying that your dad wants his dominoes back, whatever. Yeah, I think it is actually his parents. I could be wrong on that, but I think it is actually his parents, but they're, you know, playing characters or they're acting, or as it were.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, you're right. It does give you a really interesting glimpse into that world and helps flesh it out, I think.
Who, I don't know if you already said this and I missed it, but who were the producers on the album? Like, who, is there anybody recognizable that worked on the album with him?
Dr. Dre is the biggest one. I'm not sure how many of the tracks that he was involved in, but it's a, I guess you'd say a typical hip hop production that there's like about 50,000 people involved.
Yeah,
there's a new producer for just about every track here. So a whole bunch of different people, but yeah, Dre is the biggest name for sure. And he's more of a writer and performer than he is actually producer, I think, on this, but yeah, it wasn't something that I really took note of. I'm sure there's people listening that'll be outraged they haven't mentioned specific producers, but
no, I was hoping that we could make some kind of tie-in like we always do, but I feel like this is going to be the outlier that we're not going to be able to tie back to Jack Antonoff in any way.
Well, you did share a video of, there is a video you shared of Taylor Swift singing along to Backbeat Freestyle, right?
Yeah, because she, I don't know how exactly it happened, but her and Kendrick Lamar became friends at some point when she released 1989, the original album. And then he featured on Bad Blood, which was only for a music video. His feature was only a music video in the original one. But when she released 1989, Taylor's version, she also released a deluxe edition that includes Bad Blood featuring Kendrick Lamar. And she was like really shocked when she reached out and he agreed to sing rap his bit again for Bad Blood, which is, I haven't dug into the full story there, but I guess there is a tie-in in that way, because I feel like his verses in Bad Blood, they remind me a lot of Backseat Freestyle. And I think that's why that's the only song on the album that I'm like, this song I could listen to.
Yeah.
Because it really does sound like Bad Blood.
Yeah, I think that is one of the, to me, one of the strongest songs, and I put songs in quotes there. Like, I think for me, most of the songs on this album are, it sounds really wanky, but they're more experiences or snapshots or vignettes than they are songs, if that makes sense. This one feels like a more contained song in that it's shorter than a lot of the stuff on the album. It's kind of punchier. It's simpler in a way. And yeah, there is still part of the narrative that's told there, but it's still, yeah, it feels more self-contained or something.
It also has for something that doesn't have music behind it, it's just a beat and then rapping over the top. It's surprisingly melodic. Like the cadence and the flow that he has is, and it is also a pretty incredible demonstration of the voice control that he's got and the different sort of voices he can drop into, like the gravelly voice that comes in 2.5 minutes in or so, and the way that he elevates when he's saying biatch, and
when he's saying what?
Biatch.
So I
think it's a strong showcase of his technical skills.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think he's really is a master of his craft, and we see that a lot throughout this album, but that's a really good example of it. And he's just so good. He's just so good at what he does. And I think if you guys at all enjoyed this, then I would recommend you check out the follow-up to Pimp a Butterfly, which is also very strong. I mean, the guy's just a very, very, very good artist. So check out his stuff, I reckon. Unless you hated it, in which case, maybe don't.
I don't know if I didn't like love it, but I don't think it's fair to say that I hated it or that I didn't like it, because it's not something that I can like conceptualize in my head as like, so I can't, my brain doesn't, because I'm like, I don't know how to compare this to anything I've listened to ever, or if it's even comparable or if there's any kind of experience I can pull from this that I can compare to my own life or anything like that. Like, I feel like there are songs that definitely, or tracks, I guess I should say, that stood out to me as tracks that I enjoyed more than other tracks, but I definitely didn't hate it. I don't know if it's something that I'm going to like listen to a lot, although I do feel like it would be probably good, pretty good running music, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't listen to this much at all, and I really like it, but it's not something that I will reach for very often at all, like maybe once every year or two even, because it's such a different listening experience. I don't think it's a particularly enjoyable listen in the sense that putting on, I don't know, Taylor Swift 1989, Taylor's version is an enjoyable listen where you get some great upbeat songs. This is more of a, right, I'm going to dive into a gritty story here and have this experience. So yeah, I think I touched on it before, but there's something fascinating to me about the fact that he's able to craft something that creates that reaction where it's like, this is clearly music and clearly an album and clearly a collection of songs, but it also hits in a way that is just totally different to a lot of stuff that we'd listen to. And that might just be, you know, our upbringings, our backgrounds, and the distance from the world that he's talking about, or it might be something else. I don't know, but that feeling is really interesting to me.
Just to, again, because it's an audio medium, I should point out that the three of us are the whitest people alive.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is relevant. Like, I think it very much is relevant.
Only one is from America, but also like Colorado is not comparable to either coast.
Yeah. And even if you were from LA, like LA versus, you know, other parts of LA versus Compton is a different story as well, right? So
yeah,
we're a long way removed from it, which makes it interesting. And I'd love to hear from some of our listeners if they have, you know, life experience or are closer to this in whatever way they might be. I think this is a sort of art that creates reactions in a lot of different ways, and be keen to hear for sure. So please reach out.
Yeah, definitely.
I
think that we have one listener who maybe will be able to.
Are you cutting it off there? I think we have one listener.
That's it.
We have one listener. She just walked in the room.
I was going to say, it's your mum, right? Yeah.
Sorry, Ian, I cut you off.
What was I going to say? I think that, like Matt, I don't listen to this very often. And I listened to it a fair bit when it came out, for probably the first year or so after it came out, but haven't listened to it really since then. So it was kind of nice to have an excuse to revisit it and remember what it was that I liked about it. And I think, for me, the narrative and the technical ability of the rapping is impressive, but the music is really strong as well, I think. There's a few songs which are really, really stand out to me as having great musical accompaniment. I really liked Swimming Pools, Drank, which perfectly captures this kind of wooziness of being drunk or high or both. It's got a really nice sort of melodic flow in the pre-chorus. There's these sort of string spikes. It's also kind of there are several songs on the album which have these different movements within them. So Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst has these kind of two movements. From 7 minutes on, the sort of second movement, the Dying of Thirst bit, that's probably my favorite stretch of the album, with this choral in the background, the repeated refrain of Tired of Running. That is something that I really enjoyed listening to begin with and was really, really pleased to remember or to revisit. I also like that the music does have a kind of subdued subterranean quality which matches the lyrical content as well. So The Art of Peer Pressure has this kind of smooth loungy sound in the intro and then a grimy transition into a deeper tone, this really deep bass, and that fits the tension of K-Dot's excursion into crime.
Hmm.
When the album came out, it was number one on Pitchfork's Best Albums of 2012. And because I read Pitchfork, that was kind of the thing that made me think, oh, okay, maybe I should listen to this. And there are kind of bits scattered through musically, which are similar to stuff that I listen to. Like there's a Beach House sample on Money Trees. They're a two-person band that do really, really lovely shoegaze stuff. So there's kind of enough there musically to hook even me, the whitest boy alive. And then the lyrical stuff kind of unfolded over time when the initial musical draw card of it maybe had got its hooks in me first.
Have you listened to Pimp a Butterfly? Excuse me.
Yeah, I listened to it once or twice, I think, when it came out. I listened to a bit of Damn yesterday, and I liked what I heard, but I didn't really feel compelled to listen to more.
I think To Pimp a Butterfly is even more interesting musically. He kind of goes away from this is kind of minimalist hip hop in a way that is a lot more To Pimp a Butterfly is more experimental and kind of almost free jazzy in parts and quite interesting in that way. So yeah, if you've heard it, great. But I was going to say, if you haven't, it could be worth a listen because there's a lot of musical stuff there that's quite hooky, I think, quite interesting.
Right. Well, I think what I liked about this one, I can't remember when Take Care by Drake came out, but I really liked that album and it had a similar kind of musical tone in parts, that kind of sad hip hop kind of thing. And some of Kanye West's work around this kind of time frame as well. So it kind of musically fits more in that kind of space than the more brash, showy hip hop, which doesn't really do too much for me. But I do think that as a piece of storytelling and as a technical display of his mastery, it's better than each of those albums. Although, having said that, I don't like the song with Drake on it on this album that much. Poetic Justice.
Which one's that? No, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't listen to Drake at all now, and I don't like his vibe as a person. But I really liked Take Care and listened to that a huge amount when it came out, and still think it's pretty exceptional. So this reminds me of that, but is not as good. And I think the Drake appearance is a misstep.
What were your favorite tracks, guys? We've talked about Backbeat Freestyle, talked about
Bitch
Compton.
Don't Kill My Vibe.
You like that?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And Money Trees, although I could do without the very end, just for the graphic context. Felt like such a prude listening to this album.
What happens at the end? Is that where the voice memo, or is that like part of the song?
No, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I wrote down, but I don't love the ending.
Okay.
There's a start, so I can't remember what it was exactly, but I remember listening to the ending and being like, it's too far for me.
Yeah, there's a few moments like that, isn't there?
Yeah, but it works though. Like, it's not it's not completely out of place. I feel like it's just my personality that's like, I don't like that, but it's not because it shouldn't be there. But yeah, I feel like Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe, Backseat Freestyle, Money Trees, and Compton were probably my favorite tracks.
For me, Backseat Freestyle, The Art of Peer Pressure, Mad City, Swimming Pools, and Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst.
Yeah, I'm similar. I like most of those. I think The Art of Peer Pressure, probably not my favorite on the album, but I think it's also one of the most important songs because it's so pivotal to that whole I'm wrapped up in a world that I don't really want to be in thing. So narratively, I think it's probably the most important song, or one of the most important. Backbeat Freestyle is great. I like Poetic Justice. I think the hook for that is really nice. Good Kid and Mad City, Swimming Pools. And I think Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst is pretty incredible for how quickly it moves along for a song that's 12 minutes long. And I say song, it's not really a song, is it? It's more of a, I don't know, a scene or something like that, which is broken into multiple parts with three different characters appearing in it. So yeah, that's a story all on its own, that one. But yeah, pretty stunning album, I think.
I don't know how to rate this one.
It's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I feel like I'm going to give it a 6.8 out of 10, but knowing that I should rate it higher for what it is, but personal preference.
Mm.
I think in some ways it's kind of like a landmark album and a really important album and a really good album. There are songs that I don't like on it, so I don't think it's a perfect album. And it's also really not my kind of music that much. Like it's not the kind of thing that I would listen to, but I do think it's really, really strong for what it is. I'm going to give it 8.
Yeah, I found this one hard to rate as well, because I think it kind of breaks down for me how I rate things. Like, if you just go purely on an enjoyment level, then I don't think that does justice to what this is. I think in terms of my appreciation for what he's been able to create and the story he's told and the place that this has in, you know, the pantheon of, you know, West Coast hip hop albums or whatever, it's got to be a 9 or greater for me. But I think actual enjoyment, it's probably like an 8. Like, it's not the most enjoyable listen, but I do really appreciate listening to it. So I'm going to split the difference and go 8.5. I think that's probably where I'd land. And yeah, it makes me want to go and listen to his other stuff. And also his most recent album, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, is pretty stunning as well. Some very strong moments on there too, if you're at all interested. 8.5.
What are you going to give us next, Abby?
Yeah, where to next? We've had some stuff in the last few episodes, haven't we? We've gone some places.
I know. And I feel like I could take this any which way. I have 5 albums that I'm kind of toying with. Although now there's a overarching presence that I feel like I should pick, even though it wasn't on my list before.
It is wild to me that you're just doing this on the fly.
Yeah, I feel stressed.
Like, I sweat over this for weeks.
I don't know which way is better, to be honest, because I feel like a pure sense of panic in my chest at the moment. Because there's just so many ways that I could take this.
Can I just interject while you're mulling it over?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I feel like sometimes you feel a sense of needing to bring us back to something more palatable based on Ian and I sometimes recommending stuff that's a bit offbeat. Mm-hmm. All I would say is choose what you think is most interesting and you want to talk about. Don't feel like you have to choose something to balance out whatever nonsense we bring to the table.
Well, I feel like I really want to pick a female artist because we've had a good chunk of male artists, but there's a couple albums that I just like really want to talk about that I won't get to pick for 2 more, 3 more episodes. So I can't. So I'm like, I want to pick like 4 albums because I want to talk about more than one album, but that's not how this goes. That's not the game. So I'm going to pick Lana Del Rey's debut album, Born to Die.
Cool.
I haven't listened to it since it came out, so curious to see what it's like to go back.
How old's the album?
I think it came out at maybe around the same time actually as this one. Maybe 2010. Also, did you guys know that you know, a couple episodes ago we talked about Imogene Heap? She was the co-writer on Clean on 1989. I didn't know that.
Cool. Didn't know that either.
It came out in 2011.
Nice.
And yeah. So
are we doing the Paradise edition or are we doing the standard?
Just the standard edition, I think.
Okay. Cool.
Although I don't remember what if the like no. The Paradise edition is 1 hour and 40 minutes long.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
No.
1 hour and 10 minutes of Kendrick was enough. Don't need 1 hour and 40 yeah. minutes.
Okay, so yeah, Lana Del Rey, Born to Die, standard edition. And I will continue to pile things onto my list that I want to talk about and then never pick them.